Egypt and the Primordial Tradition, written by Christian Ribisi, FRC, from Rosicrucian History and Mysteries.
Questions have often arisen regarding the origins of Rosicrucianism. Although a consensus of researchers places its historical beginnings in the 17th century, we are of the opinion that the genesis of this movement dates from much farther back. Such was the belief of the German alchemist Michael Meyer. In his work Silentium Post Clamoris, he described Rosicrucianism as having arisen from the Egyptians, the Brahmins, the mysteries of Eleusis in Samothrace, the Magi of Persia, the Pythagoreans, and the Arabs. Several years after the publication of the Fama Fraternitatis in 1614, and the Confessio Fraternitatis in 1615, Irenaeus Agnostus, in Clypeum Veritatis, felt no hesitation in declaring Adam to be the first representative of the order. The Rosicrucian manifestos likewise made reference to the same source. Quote, "Our philosophy has nothing new in it. It conforms to what Adam inherited after the fall, and what Moses and Solomon practiced." Unquote. Adam, Egypt, Persia, the Greek sages, and the Arabs were conjured up for good reason by Michael Meyer. He alluded to a concept that was very widespread before the coming of Rosicrucianism. This concept, the primordial tradition, first appeared in the Renaissance, especially after the rediscovery of the Corpus Hermeticum, a group of mysterious texts attributed to an Egyptian priest, Hermes Trismegistus. From him, this idea of a primordial revelation of which Egypt was the cradle would have considerable repercussions. Our intention is not to describe Egyptian esotericism in full, but rather to indicate how this heritage was transmitted. The route connecting Egypt to the West is long and offers a varied landscape. We will not discuss all of its details because this description would occupy an entire volume. However, certain salient points will allow us to understand Rosicrucian origins. While engaging in this undertaking, it is necessary to follow a trustworthy guide, and Hermes appears to be the character most noted in the ancient writings. Indeed, the history and myths relating to this individual are particularly rich in information concerning our purpose at hand. Since antiquity, Egypt's civilization has been much admired. Its mystery schools, which acted both as universities and monasteries, were the guardians of its wisdom. These schools experienced a distinctive flowering under the rule of Akhenaten, especially after he introduced the concept of monotheism. The Egyptian religion is particularly intriguing because of its mysterious cults. Although Hermes had some of his origins in Egypt, in the god Thoth, he was primarily a Greek god. He was the son of Zeus and of the nymph Maia. The Greeks considered him the god of shepherds, thieves, merchants, and travelers. He was also the inventor of astronomy, weights and measures, the musical scale, the art of gymnastics, and the cultivation of olive trees. Most of all, he was the messenger of Zeus and the shepherd who guided the dead toward the world of Hades. His attributes were a caduceus and winged sandals. In the Egyptian pantheon, Thoth enjoyed a special illustriousness. He was shown as an ibis-headed man or as a baboon. Equipped with a palette, reed, and papyrus, he was always ready to transcribe the words of Re. He was the very epitome of a scribe. He was described as the inventor of hieroglyphs. Thoth was the protector of scribes, the teacher of medicine, astronomy, and the arts. He knew the secrets of magic. He was the initiator. On the statue of Amenhotep, son of Hapu, a high official and favorite of Amenhotep III, it is written, "But into the divine book I have been initiated. Of Thoth I have seen glory, and among mystery I introduce myself." In a period as far distant as the Old Kingdom, Thoth was already described as a messenger of the gods, a characteristic he preserved when passing into the Greek world in the guise of Hermes. In his capacity of judge, he stood between Seth and Horus. He was the protector of the Eye of Horus. In the Middle Kingdom, Thoth personified wisdom. He was particularly honored in Hermopolis, and the priests of this city attributed to him the Book of the Two Ways, a text which described the voyage to the afterlife. The inscriptions found in the sarcophagi of this period also mention a divine Book of Thoth. At the beginning of this period, Thoth appeared as the writer of sacred writings, the all-knowing teacher, the one who knew the secret magical rites. It is also reported that the sacred texts were found at the foot of his statue. This symbolic theme is found much later in the story describing the discovery of the tomb of Hermes Trismegistus by Apollonius of Tyana. In the Book of the Dead, Thoth plays the role of judge when weighing the heart of the deceased. In the New Kingdom, Akhenaten abolished the ancient pantheon when instituting the cult of Aten. Even so, Thoth preserved certain prerogatives during the pharaoh's reign. After the disappearance of the founder of Egyptian monotheism, Thoth regained his qualities of all-knowing sage and the teacher of secrets. During this period, writings of an occult character became important. This is undoubtedly why H. Spencer Lewis regarded Amosis, the pharaoh who introduced this period, as being the organizer of the school of initiates that later gave rise to the Rose Cross. Moreover, he thought Hermes was a sage contemporary with Akhenaten. The occult knowledge of the Egyptians was considered secret. It was transmitted by houses of life, sometimes called mystery schools. The opinions of the specialists are divided regarding the importance of occultism and magic in the time of the pharaohs. Eric Hornung, an Egyptologist at the University of Basel, feels that too many historians have taken an overly positivist approach regarding this matter. He declares that it is undeniable that at the beginning of the New Kingdom, at the latest, a spiritual climate propitious to the emergence of Hermetic wisdom dominated. Emphasizing the important role of Jan Assmann, who concentrated on this subject while studying the Ramesside period, he added that at present there prevail conditions much more favorable to the discovery of Hermeticism's possible Egyptian roots. In the Late Kingdom, Thoth was considered to be the teacher of magic. Estella calls him twice great, and he is presented sometimes as thrice or very great, or even five times great. In the Ptolemaic period, the Greeks and Romans were fascinated by Hermopolis and its cult of Thoth. There developed at this time an original synthesis between the Egyptian civilization and the Hellenistic culture. Considerable evidence relates to the relationships between the sages of Greece and of Egypt. In the 5th century BCE, Herodotus visited Egypt and conversed with the priests. In his history, he discusses the Osirian mysteries celebrated at Sais. For him, the mysteries of Greece owed much to Egypt. Comparing the Greek and Egyptian pantheons, he observed that certain divinities of his country had their origin among the pharaohs. There existed a strong tradition which claimed that the great sages of ancient Greece obtained knowledge from their Egyptian teachers. It was claimed that many among them were initiated into the mysteries, thus assuring the transmission of Egyptian learning into the Greek world. Among them, Herodotus spoke only of Solon. In Timaeus and the Critias, Plato, who himself had gone to Egypt and remained there 3 years, spoke of the discussions that Solon had with the Egyptian priests. In the Republic, he also emphasized the prestige of the Egyptian priests. Furthermore, he mentioned Thoth in the Phaedrus. Socrates a contemporary of Plato, made Egypt the source of philosophy and indicated that Pythagoras went there to be instructed. Apollonius of Rhodes claimed that Hermes, by way of the sun, Aethalides, was the direct ancestor of Pythagoras. Diodorus Siculus provided the greatest amount of information concerning the influence of Egypt upon the sages of Greece. He based this partly upon what he had gathered in his encounters with the Egyptian priests and partly upon the Aegyptiaca, a work by Hecataeus of Abdera. Diodorus stated, first of all, that Orpheus traveled to Egypt and was initiated into the Osirian mysteries. After returning to his homeland around the 6th century BCE, he instituted new rites that were called the Orphic Mysteries. Diodorus also stated that rites observed in Eleusis by the Athenians were similar to those of the Egyptians. Plutarch later remarked that the Orphic and Bacchic mysteries were really of Egyptian and Pythagorean origin. Diodorus also reported on the travels of Solon and of Thales of Miletus, who visited the priests and measured the pyramids. Plutarch declared that Thales brought Egyptian geometry back to Greece. Diodorus also claimed that Thales urged Pythagoras to go to Egypt, and it was in this country that the latter conceived the concept of the migration of souls. Iamblichus later added that Pythagoras had studied in the Egyptian temples for 22 years, and after having received this training, he established his own school in Crotona, Italy, and he taught what he had learned in the Egyptian mystery schools. Finally, Diodorus reported that in the 5th century, Democritus, discoverer of the atom, was taught by the geometers of the pharaoh and then initiated in the Egyptian temples. One of Plato's followers, Eudoxus of Cnidus, a mathematician and geometer, also made the voyage to the land of the Nile. While there, he was initiated on both the scientific and spiritual levels. Pliny specified that he would report in his country some important astronomical knowledge, as those which related to the exact duration of the year, which is 365 1/4 days. His hypothesis of homocentric spheres constituted the point of departure of traditional astronomy. Plutarch, a member of the sacerdotal college of Apollo in Delphi, where he was high priest, also sought knowledge along the banks of the Nile. While there, he was initiated by Clea, a priestess of Isis and Osiris. In his book Isis and Osiris, Plutarch spoke of the works called Books of Hermes and emphasized the importance of Egyptian astrology. He also reported that many authorities declared Isis to be the daughter of Hermes. In drawing a parallel between Zoroaster and Moses, Diodorus introduced a concept that would be in considerable vogue in the Renaissance, where he spoke of a philosophia perennis, transmitted by way of the great sages from the beginning of time. Beginning in the 2nd century BCE, the Greeks claimed that Thoth had for a son Agathodemon, who himself had engendered a son named Hermes. The latter, considered to be the second Hermes, was called Trismegistus, that is, thrice greatest. Thus, in the 3rd century CE, the Greeks adopted Thoth, giving him the name of Hermes and describing him as Trismegistus, or thrice greatest. As Thoth was the teacher of speech and writing, it was natural that the Greeks made him the father of Homer, their greatest poet. In the 3rd century CE, Heliodorus indicated that Homer was the son of Hermes and an Egyptian priest's daughter. Eventually, each era added some detail, and little by little was forged the concept, which stated that Egypt was the source of wisdom and knowledge. With the conquest of Egypt by Alexander the Great in 333 BCE, the assimilation of the Egyptian culture by the Greek world was accelerated. The focus of this activity occurred in the city of Alexandria, founded in 331 BCE, where the waters of the Nile mixed with those of the Mediterranean. A crossroads of Egyptian, Jewish, Greek, and Christian cultures, it acted over the centuries as the intellectual center of the Eastern Mediterranean. Therapeutae, Gnostics, and various other mystical movements developed around this city. Its library, enriched by more than 50,000 volumes, gathered together all of the knowledge of the era. Alexandria was also the crucible where Greco-Egyptian alchemy flourished. The city gave birth to a new science in the form of alchemy, a continuation of ancient Egyptian practices that was transformed and revived by Greek thought. Its originality consisted of offering a concrete and universal discipline free from the grasp of religion. Hermes Trismegistus is represented by Alexandrian alchemists as being the founder of this art, became the new transmitter of the ancient tradition. However, we should note that alchemy already existed in China and India. Among the Alexandrian alchemists, Bolos of Mendes was a notable figure, often being described as the founder of Greco-Egyptian alchemy. In 30 BCE, Alexandria became the capital of the Roman province of Egypt. The Romans assimilated the Greco-Egyptian Hermes with Mercury, their god of commerce and travelers. Mercury Hermes was the messenger of the gods, the conductor or guide of souls. Rome rapidly adopted Egypt and its cults. Three centuries before the Christian era, texts that are now called the Hermetica, because their authorship is attributed to Hermes Trismegistus, began to take shape. This literature expanded considerably from the 1st century BCE, and in the Nile Delta region, the composition of the Hermetica continued until the 3rd century CE. Written in Greek, an Egyptian form of esotericism is quite apparent. Clement of Alexandria spoke of the 42 books of Hermes, which the Egyptians carried about in their ceremonies. Iamblichus attributed 20,000 books to Hermes, whereas Seleucus and Manetho mentioned about 36,525. The most celebrated, written between the 1st and 3rd century CE, are the 17 tracts which were gathered together under the title of Corpus Hermeticum. They are composed primarily of dialogues between Hermes, his son Tat, and Asclepius. The first of these treatises, Pomandres, discusses the creation of the world. The Asclepius is also an important text as it describes the religion of the Egyptians and the magical rites they practiced for attracting cosmic powers meant to animate the statues of the gods. Finally, the fragments of Stobaeus constitute the third group of the Hermetica. These are composed of 39 texts and consist of dialogues between Isis and Horus regarding the creation of the world and the origin of souls. These texts, generally attributed to Hermes Trismegistus, claim to be translated from the Egyptian. In truth, they contain few authentic Egyptian elements. They are essentially characterized by Greek philosophy, but also by Judaism and Zoroastrianism. They do not compose a coherent whole and present numerous doctrinal contradictions. Among the Greeks, the influence of Egypt was felt primarily through its literature. But among the Romans, the influence took a different twist. The latter were not content to travel to the land of the pharaohs. In 30 BCE, after the suicide of Cleopatra and the conquest of Egypt by Octavian, the country became a Roman province. At the beginning of the 1st century CE, the Romans controlled the Nile Valley. They embraced its culture, and the emperor was compared to a pharaoh. The conquerors adopted certain rites of the land they had taken, and the cult of Isis found a home in Rome. Rome adopted Egyptian architecture. Even now we can admire one of the last remnants of this era, the pyramid of Caius Cestius. Another, now vanished, was erected in the necropolis of the Vatican. The city also bristled with numerous obelisks taken from Karnak, Heliopolis, and Sais. Visitors to Rome may still admire more than 10 of them. The existence of an Isaic college is attested around 80 BCE, and by 105 BCE, a temple consecrated to the worship of Isis was located in Pompeii. The Iseum in the Campus Martius, which included a temple dedicated to Isis and Serapis, remained the most important evidence of the presence of Egyptian cults among the Romans. But the encounter of the two religions did not pass smoothly, and Caesar barely favored the gods of Egypt. Virgil and Horace describe the battle of monstrous divinities as Anubis brandished his arms against Neptune, Venus, and Minerva. Ovid saw things in a more flattering light. The cult of Isis was tolerated in Rome, and Nero introduced some Isaic feast days in the Roman calendar. Marcus Aurelius constructed a temple for the Egyptian Hermes. In the 2nd century CE, the Pax Romana established peace throughout the Mediterranean world. In this era, we find a veritable passion for past civilizations, the Hindus, Persians, Chaldeans, and above all the Egyptians. Fascinated by Egyptian temples that were still in operation, rich Romans flocked to the land of the pharaohs. Apuleius, a Latin writer intrigued by the mysteries, also went there. In The Golden Ass, he described for us the Egyptian mysteries in his colorful manner. Along with alchemy, magic and astrology assumed greater importance. Claudius Ptolemy, a Greek living in Alexandria, wrote the Tetrabiblos, a treatise that codified all the principles of Greek astrology with Egyptian and Chaldean influences, signs, houses, aspects, elements. Ptolemy was not merely an astrologer. He was also an astronomer to whom we owe geocentrism and the theory of the epicycles, which dominated science until the 17th century CE. It was Ptolemy who transmitted Greek astronomical knowledge to the West. Clement of Alexandria, a Greek church father, drew in his Stromateus a portrait of the Egyptian astrologers of his time who always had to be ready to recite the four astrological books of Hermes. Olympiodorus presented alchemy as a sacerdotal art practiced by the Egyptians. The Leiden and Stockholm papyri depict the metallurgical procedures as effectively being linked to magical formulas. In the 3rd century CE, Zosimos of Panopolis settled down in Alexandria so as to dedicate himself to alchemy. The first well-known alchemical author, he bestowed upon this science his concepts and symbolism. But his alchemical writings do not simply revolve around laboratory work. They also discuss the transformations of the soul and entail a mystical quest. Alchemy expanded so greatly in the 3rd century CE that Emperor Diocletian, disturbed by a possible devaluation of precious metals, promulgated an edict prohibiting the practice and condemning alchemical texts to the flames. Neoplatonists were considerably interested in Egypt. Iamblichus, who was initiated into the Chaldean, Egyptian, and Syrian rites, is an enigmatic individual. Some extraordinary powers were attributed to the divine Iamblichus, the head of a Neoplatonist school. While in prayer, his body was said to rise more than 10 cubits from the earth, and his skin and clothing were bathed in a beautiful golden light. Egypt held a chosen spot in his writings. In De Mysteries, on the Egyptian Mysteries, Iamblichus presented himself in the guise of Abamon, a master of the Egyptian sacerdotal hierarchy and an interceptor of Hermetic teachings. He also promoted theurgy and Egyptian divinatory practices. A little later, another Neoplatonist, Proclus, also strongly affected by theurgy, believed himself to be part of the chain of Hermes. He had great influence on Sufism and on such Christian thinkers as Johannes Scotus Erigena, Meister Eckhart, and many others. Nevertheless, this era saw Egypt fading away before an ever-expanding Christianity. Alexandria played an important role In the many controversies that marked the beginnings of this religion, newly imposed by Constantine. In the 3rd century CE, the Egyptians abandoned hieroglyphs and adopted the Coptic script for transcribing their language. The Copts adapted the secret knowledge of the pharaohs to Christianity. Soon afterwards, Emperor Theodosius promulgated an edict against non-Christian cults, thus marking the end of the Egyptian clergy and their ceremonies. Christianity, which began to gain in influence, was not unaware of Hermes. In the middle of the 2nd century CE, a kind of Christian Hermes appeared in the pages of a book entitled The Shepherd, whose author was said to be Hermas. It is a Roman work in which Hermas, the messenger of penance and penitent, took the form of a prophet. The Shepherd is an apocalyptic work in which all the conventions of the genre are found. In the early church, Jesus is often presented as a shepherd, a role that is also attributed to Hermes. Yet in this instance, it is not Jesus that Hermes designates, but the angel of the penance. Considered for a long time to be an integral part of the canonical scriptures, the shepherd passed to the status of apocryphal scripture at the beginning of the 4th century. The church fathers generally loved to delve into mythology so as to disclose the beginnings of the gospel. Hermes Trismegistus continued to garner respect among them. Lactantius, in his Divinarum Institutionum, or Divine Institutions, saw Christian truth formulated before the advent of Christianity in the Corpus Hermeticum. He placed Hermes Trismegistus in the first rank of Gentile prophets who foresaw the coming of Christ. St. Augustine, the father of the Church, in his City of God, a fundamental treatise of Christian theology, made Hermes a descendant of God. He had read the Asclepius in the translation by Apuleius of Madaura, but even though he admired Hermes Trismegistus, he rejected the magic revealed in this work. Clement of Alexandria liked to compare Hermes Logos to the Christ Logos. Emperor Julian the Apostate, the nephew of Constantine, attempted a brief return to the worship of the mysteries. He enacted measures against Christians and restored paganism. Influenced by Neoplatonism, he extolled ancient theurgy. This return was brief, however, and by 387 CE, the Christian patriarch Theophilus undertook the destruction of the Egyptian temples with the idea of transforming them into places of Christian worship. Nonetheless, on the island of Philae, an Egyptian temple continued to function. It was not closed until 551 CE by order of Emperor Justinian. It will be noted that the Egyptian temples remained active between the 1st and 6th century CE, that is, during the period which covers the composition of the Hermetica. It is often remarked that these texts are pessimistic regarding the future of the Egyptian religion, which leads us to think that they were written in an Egyptian setting by a priestly class. Fragments from the Egyptian wisdom may repose in the Hermetica, but they are expressed in an indirect fashion, having been submitted to the process of Hellenization. Alexandria had been the starting point where Egyptian teachings entered the Greek and Roman worlds. It was where the ancient tradition was reformulated by way of alchemy, astrology, and magic. This point of departure, after having scattered such wisdom into a greater portion of the East, was already disappearing by the 6th century CE, and the Arabs now took up the torch. Alexandria was seized by the Arabs in 642 CE, a date which marks an end to the city's days of glory. However, the conquest of the city was not the Arabs' first encounter with esotericism. Rather, they had been aware of Hermes long before this time. For example, they had learned from the Sabaeans, inhabitants of the mythical kingdom of Sheba, which was supposed to be a place of earthly paradise. In ancient times, it was also called Arabia Felix, or Happy Arabia, and was said to be the land of the phoenix. Centuries later, Christian Rosenkreuz was supposed to have visited the area so as to gather together the marvelous knowledge deposited there. The Bible states that the queen of this land, the Queen of Sheba, visited King Solomon. Although the location of her land was not specified in the Old Testament, the Quran indicates that it was in southern Arabia, modern-day Yemen. The Sabaeans were notable astrologers, and Maimonides indicated that this knowledge assumed a predominant role among them. Tradition claims that the Magi who greeted Christ came from this legendary land. The Sabaeans possessed both the Hermetic alchemical writings and the Corpus Hermeticum. Being knowledgeable in such subjects, it is they who introduced science into Islam, although they themselves evolved on the fringes of this religion. The Sabaeans claim to have originated with Hermes, to whom they dedicated a special cult. They produced some books whose contents, they claimed, had been revealed by Hermes, such as the Risalat Fain Nafs, or Letter About the Soul, and the Liturgical Institutions of Hermes by Tabit ibn Qura, an eminent figure of Sabaeanism in Baghdad. The 7th century CE signaled the beginnings of Islam. Although the Quran did not make any reference to Hermes, the hagiographers of Islam's early centuries identified the prophet Idris, mentioned in the Quran, with Hermes and Enoch. This assimilation helped to link Islam with Greco-Egyptian traditions. In Islam, Idris Hermes is described as both a prophet and a timeless personage. He is sometimes compared to Al-Qaeda, the mysterious intermediary and sage who initiated Moses and who plays a fundamental role in Sufism as a manifestation of the personal guide. Abu Mashar, an 8th century CE Persian astrologer, who became celebrated in Europe by the name Abu Mazar, drew up an account tracing the genealogy of Hermes. This text, which had immense influence in the Islamic world, distinguished three successive Hermes. The first, Hermes Major, lived before the flood. Identified with Thoth, he is described as a civilizer of humanity, as he had the pyramids constructed and engraved the sacred hieroglyphs for future generations. The second Hermes lived in Babylonia after the flood. He was a master of medicine, philosophy, and mathematics. He was also the initiator of Pythagoras. Finally, the third Hermes is described as having continued his predecessor's work of civilizing society. As a master of occult knowledge, he transmitted alchemy to humanity. In the same era, there appeared the Emerald Tablet, a text which assumed an important place in the tradition. The oldest known version in Arabic dates from the 6th century CE. Many are those who cite this text without really knowing it. Therefore, we feel that it would be useful to present it in its entirety. True without falsehood, certain and most true. That which is below is like that which is above, and that which is above is like that which is below, for accomplishing the wonder of the one thing. As all things are created from one, by the will and command of the one united who created it, so all things are born from this one thing by dispensation and union. Its father is the sun, its mother is the moon, the wind carries it in its belly, its nurse is the earth. This is the father of all perfection in this whole world. Its power is perfect when it is changed into earth. So you should separate the earth from the fire, and the subtle from the thick or gross, but lovingly with great understanding and discretion. It ascends from earth to heaven, and from heaven again to earth, and receives again the power of the above and the below. Thus you will have the splendor of the whole world. All lack of understanding and lack of ability will leave you. This is of all power the most powerful power, for it can overcome all subtlety and can penetrate all that is solid. Thus was the world created. Thus, many rare combinations originated, and wonders are wrought of which this is the way to work. And thus I am called Trismegistus, having the three parts of the wisdom of the whole world. All that I have said concerning the work of the Son is fulfilled. This work is attributed to Apollonius of Tyana, a philosopher and thaumaturgist of the 1st century Common Era. As Julius Ruska has shown, the text comes to us through the translation composed by Sagias, a Christian priest of Nablus. It appears in Kitab Sur al-Halaka, the Secret Book of Creation, by Balanus. In this book, Apollonius relates how he discovered the tomb of Hermes. He claims to have found in this sepulchre an old man seated on a throne holding an emerald-colored tablet upon which appeared the text of the famed Emerald Tablet. Before him was a book explaining the secrets of the creation of beings and the knowledge of the causes for all things. This narrative would recur much later in the Fama Fraternitatis. The role of the Arabs as transmitters of alchemy to the West in the Middle Ages is generally well known. They also left us with a vocabulary distinctive to this art. Yet Islam's role is not simply limited to that of transmission, as the Arabs conceptualized it in a form which afterwards was to assert itself everywhere. Their alchemy was not only an art of the laboratory, it was also meant to unveil the hidden laws of creation, and it comprised a mystic and philosophical dimension. Although Arab alchemy claimed to be of Egyptian origin, its practice occurred after the Arab conquest of Egypt in 639 CE. They received Greek alchemy through the Syrians, but their first masters in this art were the Persians, who had inherited the Mesopotamian esoteric traditions. The first known Arab alchemist, the Umayyad prince Khalid ibn Yazid, was initiated by Morienus, a Christian of Alexandria. Within a short time, alchemy spread throughout the Islamic world, and the Greek treatises were quickly translated. The most illustrious figure of Arab alchemy was Jaber ibn Hayyan, known in the Western world as Geber. He advanced the fundamental concepts of the great work, and his reflections led to a spiritual alchemy on a grand scale. He's also credited with numerous discoveries in alchemy. The Jaberian corpus is said to contain more than 3,000 treatises, most of which are apocryphal. They were probably the work of a school which formed around his teachings. Arab alchemy had many masters, of whom we will mention only a few. Abu Bakr Muhammad ibn Zakariya, called Al-Razi or Razis. Muhammad ibn Umayl al-Tamimi, called Zadith the Elder, of the 10th century, and Ala al-Jaldiki, of the 14th century. Before long, their texts penetrated Europe through Spain and profoundly affected the Latin West. Magic also occupied a central position in Arab spirituality. Islam made use of magical letters, much like the Hebrew Kabbalah, for penetrating the Quran's secrets. Moreover, Arab magic, which Christian Rosenkreuz informed us much later was none too pure, encompassed a wide range, astrology, medicine, talismans, and so on. Astrology was ever present in the Islamic world. Although suspect due to its pagan origins, it developed significantly from the 8th century, when the Tetrabiblos of Ptolemy was translated into Arabic. Astrology in the era of Al-Mansur, the second Abbasid caliph, was not only indebted to the Greeks, but also came under the influence of the Hindus, Syrian Christians, Judeo-Arameans, and undoubtedly the Essenes. In general, the various esoteric teachings played a fundamental role in Islam, particularly in the Shiite environment, as shown by Henry Corbin. It is easy to understand why Christian Rosenkreuz came to the Arab lands to gather the essential elements from which he was to construct the Rosicrucian order. Around the 9th century, Ibn Washiya, in a treatise entitled The Knowledge of the Occult Unveiled, presented many occult alphabets attributed to Hermes. He also made reference to the four classes of Egyptian priests descended from Hermes. Those who belonged to the third class, that is, the children of Hermes Trismegistus' sister, he called Ishra-Kayun, or of the East. Some years later, Sohrawardi, one of the greatest Islamic mystics of Persia, revived the expression Ishra-Kayun, signifying Eastern Theosophists, to describe the masters who had experienced illumination. Philosophy and the mystical experience were inseparable in his mind, and in his Book of Oriental Wisdom, he described the chain of past initiates, the Eastern Theosophists. For him, this experience was tied to Hermes, whom he made the ancestor, the father of the sages. These ecstatic philosophers, described as the pillars of wisdom, were Plato, Empedocles, Pythagoras, Zoroaster, and Muhammad. What makes Sohrawardi particularly interesting is that, in contrast to the authors we have discussed until now, he did not seek to establish a historical human filiation between Hermes and the sages of the different traditions, but a celestial initiatory filiation based on inner experiences. The heritage left by Hermes Trismegistus is manifold. His treasures, which are alchemy, magic, and astrology, constitute essential elements of traditional esotericism and have traversed many civilizations. Nonetheless, the latter have always considered Egypt to be the mother of all traditions. In the Middle Ages, this ancient heritage penetrated the West, and by the time of the Renaissance, it took on a new aspect in constituting what is generally called Western esotericism. It then developed in a special way so as to reach a critical threshold on the brink of the publication of the Rosicrucian Manifestos.